making TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Across the North Sea with our carriers on our knees, wound up in some holy camp somewhere outside Leeds. Because we do not care to fight, my friends, we are the weeds. Because we got no homes, they call us smelly refugees. Turns our bones to dust. You want some entertainment? Go on, shove it up then, if you must. Make believe you're so turned on by planted trees and shrubs, but you come round to visit us when you fancy booze and drugs. Vegetation, dance on the grove.
is the first blooming begun, but decay sets in. Bring your camera. Take a photo of life on the margins. Offer money in exchange for sex. And then get a taxi home. The story has always been the same. A source of wonder due to their ability to thrive on poor quality soil offering very little nourishment. Drinking nourishment. But weeds must be kept under strict control, or they will destroy everything in their path. Growing wild, then harvested in their prime, and passed around at dinner parties. Careful of weed. So natural, so wild, so unrefined. And someone's gonna make a fortune one day, if only they can market this stuff right. Come on, do your dance. Come on, do your funny little dance. A sensational buzz. Cup rotation, genetic modification, the creation of expectation. This is the story of the weed, the origin of the species.
Weeds. That's the two-part double shot lead-off tracks from Pulp's, at this point, final album, We Love Life. And we do, so that's why I do this. My name's James Evan Pilato. This is Media Monarchy, your source for all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Coming to you, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Busting out a quickie B-side episode. If you're keeping score, this is episode 142B. It's October 2nd, 2009. And the way we kicked off the show with Weeds gets us right into our first story. And that's right. Professional women who smoke pot and the men who love them on the next Bong of Hue. NBC's Matt Lauer talked with Dr. Julie Holland and Marie Claire's Joanna Coles about why more professional women are smoking weed.
This morning on Today's Woman, so-called stiletto stoners, educated, career-minded women who regularly smoke marijuana. The topic is highlighted in a recent article in Marie Claire, and here is one woman's story we should point out that she asked us to disguise her identity.
I am a book editor. I've worked in publishing for several years now. I often smoke pot when I get home from work.
The stereotypical pothead depicted by Hollywood.
This is it, man. This is what your grandchildren are going to be smoking.
The jobless, loveless slacker.
This weed is fantastic.
Is not the only type of person getting stoned. Educated, career-minded, successful women like this 30-something admitted pot smoker are also lighting up.
I look at it as just sort of a way to unwind and just relax and sort of decompress.
According to a recent study, 8 million women in America smoked marijuana in the past year.
For me, it's the equivalent of having a glass of wine at the end of a long day.
An illegal habit she's keeping private.
At my current job, no one knows that I smoke. My family does know. It's obviously not something that they're super happy about, but on the other hand, I have a career.
In 1 month, she'll spend roughly $200 or $300 for approximately half an ounce. And even though it's against the law, she's neither worried about getting caught nor becoming addicted.
I don't walk down the sidewalk blazing joints. I don't sit in the park next to moms and kids and smoke. I'm not worried about addiction. I feel like I'm more addicted to coffee than anything else. And I'm sure millions of people can say the same.
The changing face of pot smokers.
But you're so smart and so together and so organized and you're always on time. And I'm like, yes, I am all of those things. And I do smoke pot. It's not impossible.
Stiletto stoners. Now, that's really what Bill Hicks would call a positive drug story. If only all our stories were so silly and, yes, sexy. But unfortunately, they're not, and we're now going to have to get a lot more serious and move to the next post on MediaMonarchy.com. It's the latest swine flu, bio-war updates, the second wave, big shots, Bayer, and the bees. The first bit comes by way of the Boston Globe. Second wave of swine flu pandemic begins to hit the U.S. after months of warnings and frantic preparations. The second wave of the swine flu pandemic is starting to be felt around the country. Doctors, health clinics, hospitals, and schools are reportedly rapidly increasing numbers of patients experiencing flu symptoms. While most cases so far are mild and the healthcare system is handling the load, officials say the number of people seeking treatment for the flu is unprecedented for this time of year. From NBC Miami, strip club gives seniors a shot in the arm. That's right, strip club giving discounted flu shots to seniors. That sounds like something that would happen here in Portland as well. Seasonal flu shot may increase H1N1 risk. That's from the CBC. Again, another example of if you actually take these vaccines, you're actually far more likely to get the thing you're being vaccinated against. Because a lot of times they put live viruses within them. We've gone over all this before. So many times. And we've been tracking swine flu, this latest seemingly created in a lab, the latest example. Whether it's anthrax attacks or even a little bit of Lyme disease coming from Plum Island. Moving down the list, Washington State, my neighbor to the north, they've lifted the limit on mercury preservatives in the swine flu shot. That's from the Seattle Times. Again, there you go, mainstream press documentation. More mercury in the shots. Now we've got a clip of a doctor. Again, laying it out. In the face of the largest mass vaccination in history to begin in October, which would be now, another doctor saying that the vaccine is poison.
We are tracking H1N1 and health officials here in the U.S. saying it's too soon to know if a one-shot vaccine for the virus will actually be effective. The U.S. is working on an inoculation that requires two doses, although China and Switzerland recently announced they may have a one-dose version. We're told American officials will release their initial results from its vaccination studies and testing later this month. With me now, Dr. Kent Poltorff, who is an expert on infectious diseases. Doctor, thanks very much. We're going to put up on the screen the classic H1N1 symptoms, and I got this from the WHO and the CDC. If anybody exhibits these symptoms, what should they do? Should they go to the hospital? Should they see their doctor? What?
Well, the nice thing is it's showing that the H1N1 virus is losing its virulence. So we saw this as it came through Mexico. It lost its virulence in that the symptoms were much more mild. And that's what seems to be happening as it's making its way back through as a seasonal flu. So basically, the recommendations are same as the seasonal flu. If you have a continual fever for more than 3 hours, call your physician. If you have recurrence of fever after it goes away, if you have a high risk, including small children, consider calling your physician. If you do have, let's say, a kid turns blue, has blue fingernails, go to the emergency room. But there's no difference between who to take to the emergency room or to the doctor versus a seasonal versus a swine flu. In fact, if you had to choose, you'd probably choose at this point the swine flu over the regular seasonal flu.
Is that right? All right, now what do you think of the vaccination?
Yeah, I have more concern about the vaccine than I do about the swine flu. It's been rushed to market. There are high levels of adjuncts, which basically make it more potent, it's kind of an unrefined method that they use. They had these high levels of these adjuncts, including
thimerosal. It's an antiseptic preservative, and hasn't that been linked in some cases to autism?
It has, and you look at it, it's been shown to cause autism in children with mitochondrial dysfunction. Now, and there is controversial, they're highly implicated. And the problem is you don't know if your child has mitochondrial dysfunction. I also worry about children and people who have blood-brain barrier dysfunction or it's not fully developed, which include children, pregnant women, chronic neurological illnesses, and chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. I've seen that people have been devastated by these infections.
All right, would you give it to your kids?
I definitely would not.
You would not, all right? And in fairness, I've talked to 3 doctors in 3 days now, and all 3 have said absolutely they would give it to their kids. They intend to give it to their kids. They're going to take it themselves, but you say no.
I definitely would not. I've seen it devastate people with chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, highly implicated, again, in autism. I think you're rolling the dice. It's a proven neurotoxin. It has 25,000 times the level of mercury than would be considered toxic if it was a food or water.
Right.
And levels get up, serum levels up to 100 times the toxic level. It's too big of a risk.
All right. Dr. Kent Holtorf, an expert on infectious diseases. That's the other side. We've heard both sides now. Thank you so much.
Actually being kind of fair and balanced there, of course, Fox News. Further down the list of the swine flu updates, senators turn back ID requirement for immigrant health care. This from thehill.com. And does this mean that crazy right-wing reactionary nut from South Carolina, Joe Wilson, isn't a liar? UK girl dies after receiving cervical cancer vaccine. That's from Cryptagon, and he is charting the long story there. Ramsey County, Minnesota holds mass vaccination drill, and they're calling it Operation Big Shot. That's from the Star Tribune. Military to get mandatory swine flu shots soon, from the Associated Press. We hit it before. Here's another flashback for you. Dr. Adrian Gibbs, swine flu virus created from pig vaccine. His full documentations, we played clips from him in the past. He was one of the first people saying this was probably made in a lab. All his papers are now available in PDF and download and embeddable documents, scribed and all that. New film blames Bayer for the plight of the honeybees. This from independent.co.uk. It's a question that's baffled the worlds of agriculture and science. What is it that has caused the mysterious deaths of honeybees all over the world in the last 5 years? A new film may have the answer. Vanishing of the Bees, which will be released in the UK next month, which would be, again, now, October, claims the cause is the use of a new generation of pesticides that weakens the bees and makes them more susceptible to other diseases. Narrated by British actress Emilia Fox, the 90-minute film tells the story of what has become known as colony collapse disorder. Problem first appeared in America in the winter of 2004, when many beekeepers across the country found that their bees had suddenly vanished, leaving behind empty hives. Since then, scientists have failed to find a single cause for it. The film goes on to suggest that neonicotinoid pesticides, some of them made by Bayer, one of the world's largest chemical companies, may be behind the disappearance. The pesticides include the widely used name I can't pronounce, marketed under the trade name of Gaucho, G-A-U-C-H-O, which has been banned in France following pressure from beekeepers, but it's still in use in the U.S. and the U.K. More great documentation from the fine folks at Bayer. They brought you Zyklon B for the gas chambers. And that's pretty much all you need to know. Critics say pandemic emergency bill tramples privacy rights. That's from the TauntonGazette.com. Canada has passed immunity laws for GlaxoSmithKline, one of the swine flu vaccine makers, from lawsuits. There was an article I don't have linked up. I saw it in the New York Times. My man Robert at work showed it to me. It was essentially, if you get sick after the shot, well, don't blame the shot. It might be just unrelated things. Again, they have immunity. It's all been rushed. They haven't checked it all out, but they're going to force you with perhaps checkpoints. I believe we've maybe seen photographs of possible swine flu checkpoints. We covered the RFID wristbands. Again, the Boston Globe documented. If you've had the shot, you will get an RFID bracelet that says, I have my papers. I have the shot. If you don't, well, we may see. Santa Clara County declares a state of emergency for H1N1. That's from KRON4.com. And the last bit on swine flu updates, second wave, big shots, Bayer and the bees. New York City healthcare workers in revolt.
A standoff over the swine flu vaccine is gaining momentum. Healthcare workers from across New York held a rally in Albany today to vent their frustration in front of the state capitol. They're upset over an ultimatum from the health department.
Workers are being told to either get the swine flu vaccine or lose their jobs. CBS's Jennifer McLogan reports from an angry rally in Suffolk County.
Get vaccinated or get fired? Healthcare workers in Hopog screaming no forced shots, rallying against the state regulation requiring them to roll up their sleeves.
I do not even tend to the sick. I am in the nutrition field. They're telling me I must get the shot because I work in a health clinic setting.
Paul Small says she'll refuse, worried the vaccine is untested, unproven, leaving her vulnerable. In 1976, there were some deaths associated with the swine flu vaccination. Registered nurse Frank Menino is also angry. He says the state regulation violates his personal freedom and civil rights.
And now I will lose my job if I don't take the regular flu shot or the swine flu shot. I will lose my job.
Are you willing
to
lose it?
Absolutely. I will not take it. I will not be forced. This is still America.
And the protests shook Albany today. Demonstrators demanding freedom of choice. As many as 500,000 state health care workers are slated for the vaccines.
It's certainly their prerogative to voice their opinion.
Dr. Susan Donlan, epidemiologist at Stony Brook, says most in the medical community see benefits and safety of the shots and welcome them. Hospitals must obey the law.
Our hospital is committed to following the mandate to have our personnel vaccinated.
The state says change was needed this year to save lives. Typically, only about 45% of healthcare workers take advantage of voluntary flu vaccines. More than 150 institutional outbreaks of seasonal and H1N1 flu are expected this year in hospitals, nursing homes, and hospice centers. From Stony Brook, Jennifer McLogan, CBS 2 News.
In our Plus 2 information right now, New York State and New Jersey will get their first doses of the swine flu vaccine some point next week, and it will be the nasal mist, not a shot.
Oh, we covered the nasal mist that some Florida football bastards took. You know what really hit me while we were listening to that clip is that the truth movements have really gone mainstream. What started as 9/11 activism has now grown and reached out and hit the other important areas. So whether it's the NYCCan.org, the new initiative, new investigation going on the ballot in New York this fall, that's truth movement. Audit the Fed, Federal Reserve, the Money Masters, that's truth movement. The anti-vaccine, health, that's a truth movement. these are positive developments. The only worry for me is that it'll all be discredited by some trumped up homegrown errorism, such as we saw in the 90s, the last time we had a fake progressive in the White House. Again, this is, we're nonpartisan here on Media Monarchy. If you're new to the show, both sides completely corrupted, blackmailable. Oh, and speaking of blackmail, let's glance at Google News right now. Robert Joe Halderman is one of the guys named in this crazy David Letterman sex scandal extortion deal. However, breaking news for you, 4 minutes ago, New York Times, Dateline, Copenhagen, Chicago loses bid for 2016 Olympic Games, stunningly eliminated in the first round of voting for the 2016 Olympics on Friday, but Rio and Madrid are still in contention. We're going to cover on the flagship show coming up in an hour, episode 143 of MediaMonarchy.com, the one that goes out live to RevereRadio.net and ZeroPointRadio.com. And again, thanks to all our LPFM and online affiliates that rebroadcast MediaMonarchy.com. I love you. Thank you. We're going to get into Obama and the Pimp Olympics. So there you go. Breaking news. Chicago loses the Olympic bid. Wah, wah. And life goes on. Let's jump to one of my news sites, foodworldorder.com. First, let's hit a couple quickie headlines. This on the 10-1 binge and purge GMOs and stingaroos. A couple posts from farmwars.info. Everything you have to know about dangerous GMO. This has a, I believe, 90-minute video going into the book Seeds of Deception. Now, exactly who is in this? Oh, it's Jeffrey Smith, Seeds of Deception. It's a Vimeo. It's on farmwars.info. Going right along with that from eatdrinkbetter.com. USDA illegally approved genetically modified sugar beets. And of course, let off some steam. Red Lobster introduces new jellyfish stingaroos.
Red Lobster introduces jellyfish stingaroos. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Executives at the Red Lobster restaurant chain announced a new menu item today, deep-fried jellyfish stingaroos, composed entirely of the stinging parts of the deliciously excruciating semi-solid sea creature. Company spokesperson Ted Silverman called stingaroos a big part of Red Lobster's new adventurer's menu, which will also include breaded eel fingers and shark skin poppers.
When you see customers writhing in agony at your local Red Lobster, trust me, you're going to want to try these bad boys yourself.
Fast food industry analysts are calling stingaroos a strong response to Long John Silver's introduction of its new blind and briny boater floaters. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News.
Deliciously excruciating indeed. And what's so bizarre about all these things, I believe I've pointed out before, that that's what's fun about throwing in the onion and how there is no better satire that I know of on that level. That when you post things by the Onion alongside with other news stories, that sometimes people get confused about which one's satire and which one's real. For example, the next post on foodworldorder.com, grow GM meat in your kitchen using RFID chips in order to save the planet. This is real, and this is from the Daily Mail. A controversial cooker that grows, quote-unquote, meat and fish by heating animal cells in your kitchen claimed first prize in the Electrolux design competition. That was on September 25th. The invention, called the Cocoon, could develop food with the makeup and nutrients of real meat. This will create 100% pure meat without the need for animals to be killed and with no risk of contamination. It will change everything. So said the creator, Rickard Hennersterna. And again, this is all linked up. You can go to Electrolux. You can go read more. We're going to hit the supplemental article after we hear the quick little clip about cooking, growing fake meat with RFID chips. The cocoon.
Now, the cocoon is an interesting product or an interesting design that utilizes science to prepare meal, but also to grow food. But the kind of food that you usually don't grow, because you can grow meat or you can grow fish or something like that, which is very groundbreaking. The design of the cocoon is brilliant because it's inviting, it's friendly, it's a nice combination between transparent materials and a nice little metal accent. It looks almost like a big piece of jewelry.
You know how that he just explained how they made it. They used science. Oh, thanks for explaining that. As I believe one of the commenters on that YouTube clip said, oh, science. Man, how'd you guys land on the moon? We used science. Damn, thanks for explaining that. Let's, however, get a little more explaining from Gizmag.com. A conceptual cooker that makes meat and fish has taken out first prize in the Electrolux Design Lab 2009 competition. Cocoon uses radio frequency identification signals to identify muscle cells in meat and fish dishes and suggests cooking times. The idea behind the cocoon is to use science to... Here and there it is again. We're probably reading their press release. Use science to create food, thereby decreasing the burden on the planet, yada yada. I'm going to crack up if I continue to read that. Oh, God. You have to laugh in order not to cry and run down the road, pulling out your hair and screaming. So there it is, by way of the Daily Mail on foodworldorder.com. Grow GM meat in your kitchen with RFID chips to save the planet. The last bit from Food World Order. Australia town could be the world's very first to ban bottled water. From the AFP, an Australian town pulled all bottled water from its shelves last Saturday and replaced it with refillable bottles in what is believed to be a world first ban. Hundreds of people marched through the picturesque rural town of Bundanoon to mark the first day of its bottled water ban by unveiling a series of new public drinking fountains. So said campaign spokesman John Dee. Interestingly enough, Google John Dee. Unrelated to this, sorry, I digress. Shopkeepers ceremoniously removed the last bottles of water from their shelves and replaced them with reusable bottles that can be filled from fountains inside the town's shops or at water stations in the street. Quote, every bottle today was taken off the shelf and out of the fridges, so you can now only buy refillable bottles in shops in Bundadoon, John Dee told the AFP. The tiny town 2 hours south of Sydney voted in July to ban bottled water after a drinks company moved to tap into a local aquifer for its bottled water business.
One small Australian town is the first to vote for a ban on bottled water being sold down under. Let's see how the community is mostly in favour of switching to reusable containers.
The New South Wales town of Bundanoon has voted to ban the sale of bottled water in their town during a community water meeting. The town is implementing a new campaign called Bundy on Tap, where bottled water will be replaced with reusable plastic bottles, which can be filled up with tap water for free at various water stations around town. Some residents think their town should be a global example.
I think it's an excellent idea. It should be done in the whole of the world.
At a community meeting, 350 of the town's 2,500 residents showed up, voting in overwhelming support of the campaign, which was devised by local bike shop owner Hugh Kingston.
It's saving the world here. We're not about sort of trying to ban bottled water the world over. We're just sort of trying something here that we think is, you know, is important from a sustainability issue.
The campaign came about after a Sydney company proposed to pump water from the Bundanoon underground water supply, then bottle it for sale.
Oh, definitely worth it. Yeah, we're sure that we will
pick up sales in other things and bring more people to town.
Business owners in Bundanoon aren't too worried about losing money from bottled water and say the change will attract revenue in other areas. The bottled water industry faces economic troubles due to the economic downturn and environmental backlash.
One town southwest of Sydney is becoming the first of its kind in Australia. Bundanoon is banning the sale of bottled water, all in an effort to help the environment.
Now, if we are serious about the impact of climate change and we're serious about our concern for kids, this is a really simple way to begin.
Local residents overwhelmingly supported the ban at a community meeting.
Bottled water doesn't make sense for the environment and doesn't make sense for your wallet.
Businesses in town have voluntarily agreed to ban the sale of bottled water. The town says it'll now install free water fountains to replace the bottled stuff. But not everyone thinks that's a good idea.
Have you considered about the choice for tourists when they come here to only be able to line up at a bubbler?
The state government in New South Wales has announced its own boycott of bottled water at state departments and agencies. John Belmont, the Associated Press.
Now, while this is no doubt a good thing, I can't help but think of a more libertarian bent that would say, why on earth do you have to go in and make a law about banning it? You could just, if you believe they're wrong, don't friggin' buy it. But I guess we can't do that. Ban everything, as Jellaby Afra said. We're going to jump from one of my other sister sites to the other newest one. So, again, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and now CyberspaceWar.com. Three massive posts to go down. The first one, a news purge, DEFCON 930, asteroid attack, doomsday, the moon, and 2012. So, speaking of the asteroid attack, by way of NewScientist.com, asteroid attack, !! Putting Earth's defenses to the test.
Last October, telescopes spotted a car-sized asteroid heading for Earth. This simulation shows its trajectory a few hours before it exploded over Sudan. It was the first time an asteroid impact was predicted. Radar tracked this asteroid over 7 million kilometers from Earth. Scientists predict it has a 1 in 300 chance of hitting Earth on the 16th of March, the year 2880. If it smashes into us, an entire region of the planet could be devastated. Vast quantities of dust and water vapor would be ejected into the atmosphere and could dramatically alter the climate. Scientists have created simulations of an asteroid hitting the ocean. Here, a large asteroid triggers a tsunami. An impact like this would wreak havoc on coastal cities, but there could be ways to avoid a collision. The tricky part is to move the asteroid without breaking it into pieces that could still threaten Earth. One solution could be to land a powerful vehicle on an asteroid to steer it off course. Or it could be deflected. Precise measurements of the rock and its trajectory would have to be obtained. Then an impactor would be fired into it to alter its path. These missions would require years to plan. All we know now is that some asteroids in the solar system could soon come dangerously close to Earth.
That's right. Now, I forget the exact date and month that he said, March something, but mark it on your calendars. 2880. Now, with all that we know now, if we can't knock an asteroid out of the way before it hits us in 2880, then we probably just deserve to be hit by it, I guess. On down the list, Homeland Stupidity Report says U.S. at risk of cyber attack. That's from smartbrief.com. And again, on Cyberspace War, we're tracking both inner and outer space and the internets as they've been beating the drum and talking about cyber attacks. That's essentially what we're tracking here. We're anxiously awaiting with bated breath when the Obamasiah will appoint the cyber czar. As we've also noted many, 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 many times before, Professor Lawrence Lessig, as well as former anti-terror guy Richard Clark, they've both said there is an Patriot Act sitting on the shelf waiting for some catalyzing catastrophic event to happen. We've also got confessions of a cyber czarist from govinfosecurity.com. And interestingly enough, by way of the Salt Lake Tribune, new NSA center unveiled in budget documents. The National Security Agency was so confident that its nearly $2 billion plan for a new data center in Utah would be approved by Congress that it began designing the facility a year ago. NSA budgeting documents also indicate that the design of the 1 million square foot center should be completed by February, with building to begin in June on a project that could mean thousands of construction jobs for a state that, like many others, has been stuck in a building lull. Obama last week signed a spending bill that included $181 million for preparatory construction of the Camp Williams facility and tentatively agreed to two future phases of construction that could also cost $800 million each. The secretive agency released a statement Tuesday acknowledging the selection of Camp Williams as a site for the new center and describing it as, quote, a specialized facility that houses computer systems and supporting equipment. Budget documents provide a more detailed picture of the facility and its mission. The supercomputers in the center will be part of the NSA's Signal Intelligence Program, that's SIGINT, if you're nasty, which seeks to gain a decisive information advantage for the nation and our allies under all circumstances. The agency is set up to collect intelligence on foreign threats, but it has been accused of also participating in the unwarranted monitoring of communications of U.S. citizens. But don't worry about that. That was under that old president. That doesn't happen anymore now, right? Senate kills accountability for cybersecurity czar. That's insurancenetworking.com. So again, our misleaders, again, giving immunity. Russia's doomsday device supposedly still active and being upgraded. That's from spectrum.ieee.org. And I can't even explain this Russia doomsday device, so I won't even try, and we'll just move down the list. Cyber control, who's going to have it, the White House or Homeland Stupidity, and does it make a damn bit of difference? That's from fiercegovernment.com. Something I need to look more into, and a listener sent me some info on the WebBot project. So by way of the Telegraph, WebBot project makes a prophecy of 2012 apocalypse, something I believe, again, that the listener sent me, halfpasthuman.com, and perhaps we'll go more into the WebBot project in the future on cyberspacewar.com. But the last bit on that rundown of headlines, by way of the register.co.uk, NASA retargets their moon attack probe. You know how we're going to blow up the moon here pretty soon? NASA has shifted the planned impact point of its Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite, LCROSS. Based on new data which indicates its first choice might not contain as much hydrogen as the water-sniffing mission was looking for, the agency recently announced that LCROSS would impact on the lunar surface on October 9th in a small crater on the edge of the 48-kilometer-wide Cabus A, situated on the moon's south polar region. And that's something a little closer that we can really mark our calendars for. So right there it says October 9th. Blow up the moon. Also on cyberspacewar.com, U.S. sends two missile defense satellites into orbit. By way of the Associated Press, two sats are heading to orbit as part of a missile defense program demonstration. The pair was launched aboard a Delta II rocket on Friday, that's last Friday, as part of the Space Tracking and Surveillance System for the U.S. Missile Defense Agency. According to Bob Bishop, media relations manager for satellite developer and private military contractor extraordinaire Northrop Grumman, the satellites will demonstrate technology that can detect infrared and visible light from missiles launched from Earth. The space surveillance system will provide global tracking for the Ballistic Missile Defense System, BMD, kids. You heard a lot about that recently, that supposedly Obama said, oh, we're not going to do it in Poland anymore. But, of course, they just change names and it'll pop up somewhere else, sometimes here, sometimes in the space war, and perhaps in some other European country that we're trying to play off some other country. Data from the satellite's onboard sensors will be used by the military to intercept missile targets. More on this story from CNET News as well as IR Connect. You can read more from MDA.mil and all of the space tracking and surveillance systems. The last post, and the most recently, on cyberspacewar.com is an important one. As of yesterday, October 1st, 2009, CyberCom goes online. Why? So the military can fight the net as if it were an enemy weapons system. From democracyarsenal.org, several cybersecurity experts, including NSN Advisory Board member, there he is again, Richard Clark, released this following memo on the launch of U.S. Cyber Command, or U.S. CyberCom. So, we're now quoting a quote. This from "Your Government Failed You," Richard Clark. "Beginning today, October 1st, 2009, the U.S. Cyber Command, or CyberCom, is supposed to go online. But the Pentagon has not yet revealed what the scope of CyberCom's mission will be. Even in the most basic terms, we don't know whom Cyber Command will defend, nor what sorts of cyber threats they will defend against. For instance, in the event of a cyber attack on U.S. infrastructure, such as the electrical grid, would Cyber Command help to repel the attack? Or will Cyber Command only be concerned with defending military networks from cyber attacks? We do not know the answers to these critical questions and others because even basic info on CyberCom has not been released to the public. These are the publicly known facts about CyberCom." You ready? All two of them. "Cyber Command will exist as a subordinate unified command under STRATCOM." That's the Strategic Command. And the other is that the head of CyberCom will be the director of the NSA. That's currently Lieutenant General Keith Alexander, who will receive a promotion from 3 stars to 4 stars. You can read more about Keith Alexander as well as STRATCOM by hitting the links over to historycommons.org. Anything else about CyberCom, its mission, and how we'll execute its mission is conjecture at this point for anyone not privy to the discussion going on behind closed doors. The related update here at the bottom from Federal Computer Week: Homeland Stupidity will hire 1,000+ cybersecurity professionals. The Homeland Security Department will hire up to 1,000 additional people to work in cybersecurity jobs over the next 3 years, senior DHS officials announced. Hit the links to the press release from Homeland Stupidity themselves and more from FederalTimes.com. The new employees will be scattered across DHS agencies and will work in areas such as cyber risk and strategic analysis, cyber incident response, vulnerability detection and assessment, intelligence and investigation, and network and systems engineering. It further goes into the hiring authority and the yada yada, and there's some alphabet agencies. But again, all linked up for you. That's what I try and give you in the MediaMonarchy.com kingdom. Contextual information. The mainstream media doesn't always just lie to you. They perhaps sometimes lie by omission, but a lot of times they fail to give you the context. That's what I try and give you on the sites. That's what I feel sets them apart from a lot of other sites. So the last bit here on B-side 142, speaking of setting aside from most other sites, congratulations to James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Last Sunday, he posted the 100th episode of Corbett Report, 100 Signs We Are Winning. You may recall several episodes ago, he was taking submissions for people to call in or text message or whatever about ways that ultimately we are winning this information war. So on this 100th episode, it's an hour plus. It literally goes over 100 points. And a lot of them made me go, hey, yeah, that's a good one. I wouldn't have thought of that. Oh, yeah, that's a great one. For lack of a better term, in a way to sort of kill two birds with one stone, As a hat tip both to CorbettReport.com, but also to my man Zach from right here in Portland, Oregon, let's listen to a quick clip of James Corbett finishing off the list with some of the great suggestions by Zach from here in Portland on 100 ways we are winning.
And finally, let's finish with some comments from Zach, sign number 96 that we are winning. We are winning in part due to an idea that the universe is constantly trying to preserve novelty. It can't do that if we are all slaves. Which leads me to sign number 97. The elite have not taken one thing into account, that being the human component. The laws and orders being made all assume that we are robots that follow orders, but we are not. The human component, as I call it, is random and cannot be isolated into a control grid. If people are killed en masse, then perhaps they have a chance, but I feel that due to the 100th monkey effect, that free humanity shall emerge victorious. Sign number 98. The inherent distrust Americans and Europeans have of big government control over their lives. And sign number 99, again from Zach. The fact that there are people like me who flat refuse to give up and have a bevy of co-workers who look up to me for information because I listen to Media Monarchy and Corbett Report, Clyde Lewis too. I refuse to give up, not out of stubbornness, but out of a need to free everyone. We're spreading so quickly, it's almost scary. You can only count so many downloads from a website, but you cannot count how many people burn episodes to disk and spread them in a manner that cannot be tracked. It's an information underground, and we have no idea how strong we are, but we know we are strong based on what can be tracked.
Absolutely. So hat tip to all those folks there. Clyde Lewis, Zach, James Corbett, everybody who's, again, trying to spread information. Because only when you have good information can you make good decisions. There are a couple of supplemental bits posted up beneath episode 100 of CorbettReport.com. There is a great print interview with James Corbett done by Claire Swinney from Web of Evidence. The only revolution that matters is the revolution of the mind. The second related update is another great video from James Corbett, Intellectual Honesty and the Climate Change Debate. That's going to do it for this B-Side episode 142, MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show, MediaMonarchy.com, Food World Order and Cyber Space War. Stick around if you're listening live. Show's coming up in just a little bit. However, wherever, whenever you're listening, you're re-listening, copying, streaming, spread the info. Help me out. Help us all out. Many hands make light work. So not only is the only revolution that matter is the revolution of the mind, we also remind you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my track.
And that concludes our program for tonight. Yo.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.